The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Glenn Beck.
President Trump said that he likes conflict. He likes to watch it. But the White House is not in conflict today. And that's probably pretty true. Gary Cohen, President Trump's top economic advisor, announced yesterday he's going to resign. Cohen, who is a former president of Goldman Sachs, has been on the losing end of the White House debate over Trump's controversial steel and aluminum tariffs, which the president announced last week. The president said trade wars are easy to win. They're actually historically not, and they can be extraordinarily damaging. That was Gary Cohen's position. But the White House said there's no single reason for Cohen's decision, but it does come on the heels about the tariff talk. Yesterday, the president called Cohen a rare talent. He said that Cohen did a superb job in driving our agenda, helping to deliver historic tax cuts and reforms, and unleashing the American economy once again. It has been a better White House because of Cohen. The White House also said that Cohen is departing on positive terms with the president, and they will continue policy discussions even after he leaves. I wouldn't bet on that, because Trump, I think, is showing Cohen the door. Cohen is a Democrat who is a free trade advocate who was head of the president's economic council. Now, what Trump seems to be doing is doubling down on his what is now an unpopular decision to slap tariffs on the steel and aluminum industry around the world. Maybe Cohen just got tired of fighting the battle. Here's the thing. Tomorrow, the president is going to sign a presidential proclamation. I don't like decrees that come from the president, but the president is able to issue this extensive policy by decree because he has taken the extra step in saying these tariffs, really, this is a national security threat that we don't have the capacity to really make steel or aluminum in this country. Out of all of the steel that is used in this country to build things, I don't know how it could be a national security, a security threat to us when the amount of steel that is used in America, 74% of it, is American steel. Critics now are fretting about his departure. People who believe in free trade are concerned there's not going to be a gatekeeper like Cohen now, who managed to keep the president's nationalist economic tendencies at bay. Last summer, Cohen reportedly blocked the effort by Peter Navarro, a Trump trade advisor, to withdraw from NAFTA. Who's going to watch that gate now? And with Steve Mnuchin and John Kelly, Cohen was firmly in the camp that felt abandoning trade deals and imposing tariffs would harm U.S. businesses, our economy, and foreign relations. Now, there is no free trade advocate, really, or at least one less staunch defender in the White House. So, who is going to replace Cohen? That is an important question. The White House isn't worried. The White House press conference yesterday, the president said, "Everybody wants to work at the White House. So many people want to come in. I literally have the choice of anybody."
It's Wednesday, March 7th. You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
Sorry, I didn't mean to say Cohen.
You're thinking of Michael Cohen, the lawyer.
No, I'm thinking of I'm thinking of my grandson, Cohen. Oh. But anyway, Cohen. So let's... you know, the one thing that Trump did say that he likes, you know, he likes conflict. You know, if I take that in the way that I hope he means it, he likes to have different voices around him. He likes to have people disagree around him.
Team of rivals, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I like that. However, that's not really where America is headed. Do you happen to have that quote that we were kicking around yesterday? Or can you paraphrase that quote off the top of your head?
I can find it here in a minute.
Find it real quick. Yeah. It's an amazing thing. Americans, you know, we used to say that we're never going to be politically correct. We're just not going to be politically correct. Well, what is politically correct right now is to agree with your side in lockstep, to not listen to any other point of view or talk to anybody, to deem the other side an enemy. That's dangerous political correctness. Now, remember, political correctness came from the communist rule that if you were speaking out of line with the party, you would go to a camp and they would make you politically correct. And if you didn't conform, you were in a gulag. Listen to this quote.
I have no house, wife, children, parents, or brothers. My friends are friends as long as they think like me politically.
Who said that?
Che Guevara. Just a good guy. A mass murderer, you know, sure, but he's on a lot of T-shirts. Maybe he's in a T-shirt and... one of your teenage relatives' closet right now.
I have no friends unless they think like me politically. Look at what's happening on our college campuses. That is what's happening. That's what's happening on Facebook. That's what's happening. I won't listen. I won't read it. I won't befriend. I will not reach out unless they think like me. That's trouble for any society, let alone an American society, because that's not who we are. And when you're challenged, when you're pushed, that's when you learn things. That's when you expand. It's not one side. It's really amazing is if you look at the two sides, the left, I hate to use the word left. I don't want to use left or right. Let's use liberal and conservative. And I mean actual liberal and conservative, okay? The liberal side that says, hey, let's, let everybody be themselves, okay? Let everybody just, let's just dream and let's be and let's create and let's just go out there and explore, okay? That's all good stuff.
It's sort of how liberals view themselves, right?
Yeah, yeah. And I think a classic liberal does think that way.
A classical liberal really is closer to libertarian, right?
Yes, so totally freedom, total freedom. You go do whatever you want. So the people who are like that are the poets and the artists and the dreamers, okay? That is a mindset. Now, a political side has said you can't be creative. You can't be this person unless you believe these things politically. That goes against everything that a free thinker and an artist. Now, don't put me in a box. I have no box. Okay. Conservatives are the ones who say, wait a minute. Let's not throw the baby out with the bathwater. Hang on. There's a lot of really good things. Okay. Let's slow down just a little bit. Let's move forward, but let's not lose what we've gained. A conservative investor is somebody who says, look, I'll take a risk, but I want to make sure that I'm not losing everything on this risk. I've worked hard for this. Okay. Those two things are necessary. If you only have the dreamers and you don't have those people who are fiscally conservative, nothing happens. Nothing happens.
You see what happens in marriages when you have two people who are just dreamers.
Correct.
Yeah.
And so
those work out.
What we're doing is we're saying, I don't need the dreamers. I don't need the artists. I don't need the poets. And the other side is saying, I don't need anybody who has any kind of traditional value. I don't need anybody who believes the things that have been believed for 5,000 years. I don't need you. You believe in the traditional family. You believe in, the Constitution. You believe in those things. We don't need you. You're not part of it. We can't survive that way. We need both sides. We need each other. And what we're doing right now is we're saying, oh, no, my side will make it work. I don't want to live in a country, I don't want to live in a country that its art is all red, white, and blue and eagles. You know what I mean?
Sure. Yeah.
And I don't want to live in a world where its art is all crucifixes and urine. You know, there's
you like having both.
Right. I don't want to live in a world where we have no money because we've taken it from everybody and now we're all equally miserable. I don't want to live in that. But I also don't want to live in a world that is so conservative with its money that it never spends anything, and so it never grows, never does anything good. Never, it doesn't have any compassion because it's worried about its money. That's the stereotypical definition of conservative and liberal, and we need each other to balance each other out.
And I think that's how you grow, too.
It is.
You talk to someone who has a... It's not always like, you know, I want to go talk to Michael Moore because he's going to convince me about how great, you know, communism is. Like, obviously, that's a different story. But how can you, I can think of examples in my life, where I have changed because I considered the other side seriously. I'll give you one. Second Amendment. Of course, I grew up in Connecticut. There was like, I think there's one gun in the state. Basically, and now recently, only over the past few years, has gun violence ever really been associated with Connecticut. It's not one of those rural states. It's, you know, it's right outside of New York City. It's between New York City and Boston, right? And I was never against the Second Amendment or gun ownership or anything like that, but I absolutely could have been sold on banning assault weapons or common sense gun measures or all the things that thrown around, and you see them polled by 80 and 90% of people go along with them because they just don't know the facts about them. And over time, because I listened to people who actually did grow up in gun culture and people who actually did look at the Constitution, and a lot of that was just getting older and studying more and learning more, but a lot of it was understanding something that was really foreign to me as a kid. I didn't grow up in that culture at all. My dad was in the military, but that was about it. You know, we didn't have guns in the house. I didn't really know many people who had guns in their houses. And it took a time of talking to a lot of people who had thought about these things and had a different perspective on them, came at them from a different perspective. And then you add in, you know, the constitutional arguments and the statistics about, you know, whether guns actually commit these crimes or if they're actually people and all of the additional layers you put on top of that. But I don't think I would have, I think I easily could have settled into a life where I just believe, you know what, of course guns, yeah, you can have them, but no one needs an assault rifle. No one needs those. You don't need those things to hunt. Culturally, I absolutely could have fallen into those arguments. But I didn't, because I tried to understand both sides of the issue and then make a decision about them. Talking to people who were outside of my little group helped me understand the Second Amendment.
So you know why I began to search for God? Carl Sagan. Stephen Hawking.
Mm.
They were so convinced God doesn't exist. And I thought, I've never considered that point of view. I've never been around anybody like that. I have a relationship with God because through books, I became friends with Carl Sagan and Stephen Hawking. And I seriously considered what they had to say. And it made me search deeper and go, wait a minute. Maybe they're right. I mean, I've just been told about this. Ever since you've known me, I have been a defender of gay marriage. Have I not?
Yeah. I mean, in a different way, I think, than the normal debate has been.
Yeah. My debate is, my feeling is, people are people. Let them be. The government has no place there.
No place in marriage.
No place in marriage. Mm-hmm. Okay. You can believe whatever you want. There's no place in marriage. Mm-hmm. You know how I was raised? I was raised by a father who I didn't understand this until close to his death. When he was 16, was raped by a man. And my father was open-minded on almost everything, not homosexuality.
Really?
And we could never understand it. And we talked about it as a family, and he would never address it. Never. Homosexuality is wrong, and it's this, and it's that. And my dad was not a Bible thumper. And it made no sense because he was so open-minded on everything. Well, I didn't just pick that up. I know homosexuals. I work with homosexuals. I'm not afraid of homosexuals. I don't. That was irrational.
They're not all that scary.
They're not all that scary. In fact, they're quite helpful. I didn't just take that, and I could have taken that because my father was very clear on it. But he was, because he was open-minded on other things. Thank God, I escaped the close-mindedness of that part and became open-minded and have a different opinion by a great deal than my father did. And had for a long time had a different point of view than most conservatives, certainly anybody who is religious. It's because I talk to people. And it doesn't mean anything other than I want to be uncomfortable. The scariest thing in my life came from the quote from Thomas Jefferson. Question with boldness even the very existence of God. And I wasn't questioning God. I was questioning my childhood. I was questioning the things that happened in my childhood, the things that were the deepest, darkest secrets of my childhood. That's what that quote did. There's nothing more frightening than really facing what's in you or the void that you think is in you. That's hard. But that changed me fundamentally. And we have to have those conversations and those challenging conversations and meet those people who will push us up against the wall because they're intellectually honest. Not because they have a different point of view, but because they're intellectually honest and they're making us ask hard questions about what we believe. That's, to me, what it means to be an American that is going to move the country forward.
Glenn Beck.
So I saw a local letter to the editor. It said, something different is happening. I was recently told by a friend that our local paper is a conservative paper, and I felt once in a while the letters to the editor were written by conservative thinkers. There seems to be a change of late. I'm not sure if there's a change in the paper's role or if thinkers on the other side are stepping up to the plate, but both political parties seem so lost to their elected purpose of working for the people. They're overly focused on getting reelected and not going against their big money supporters. Last Sunday, I was watching Glenn Beck interviewed on CNN's Reliable Sources, and to my surprise, he held my attention when he spoke of Martin Luther King's call for reconciliation. He said both sides are just trying to win. We have to listen to one another. This person writes in, if we're going to continue to have a viable two-party system, we have to know what each party stands for and what they believe. And in my mind, Beck makes some very important points. I'm now reading two books about conservatives written by conservatives. To get our country back, intended by our founders, we have to step out of our comfort zone, listen, reflect, and reframe. This is fantastic. If we can have that honest discovery of each other and ask the Ford dealer about the Ford, not the Chevy dealer, ask the Ford dealer,
Glenn,
ask conservatives
Beck,
about conservatives,
Mercury.
Liberals about liberals.
Glenn Beck program.
I want to take John in Michigan real quick. Hey, John, how are you?
Good. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure, sure.
You've been talking about balance, you know, and conservatives need to balance their thinking by talking to liberals. And
Wait. No, wait. Hang on. I want to make sure I'm clear on this. Everybody needs to do this. This is not a conservative thing. All of us need
to do this.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
Yeah, I get that.
Yeah.
But my problem is that I don't think there's a moral equivalence today, largely because of the media. The media has enabled the other side, frankly, to be a lot worse than our side. I mean, they can get away with a lot more than we can. And that culture has dominated us for 100 years, right? Woodrow Wilson, Isn't that what you've been saying all these years?
It is. God bless you.
You know, he's a bad guy. Yeah. He's not as bad as he used to be. But
yeah. No, I hate that guy. I still hate him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But so I guess I just, I'm not understanding crossing over to the other side. I understand wanting to talk to liberals and understand. And
okay. So let me see that. If this helps you out. Let me see if this helps you out. I'm not talking about, I don't know if you've ever talked to somebody who is on the other side, and the minute you start talking, they just start going into talking points, and you're just not going to change their mind, and they're not listening to what you're having to say. I'm not talking about that. I mean, I get that in my own family. That's what I'm still talking about. I'm talking about people who the conversation starts with, I am really tired of hating half of the country. I'm really tired of it. And I don't think that's who you are, because I know it's not who I am. And finding the things that you have in common. I'm not talking about changing policies. We're past that point right now. We have to find basic humanity and reasons to believe in each other again, to believe that you, just because you voted for another guy or you believe something, that you are not a horrible human being that wants to destroy everything that I love. We have to get there. So there's a good portion of the population on both the left and the right that I don't need to have a conversation with, because they're into the team. Don't waste your time on that.
I understand that, and I at least theoretically understand it. It just seems like the other side has just – I don't know that we have equivalencies on both sides as far as somebody like Bernie Sanders saying that Christians shouldn't be in politics. Do we have anybody on the conservative side saying anything that outrageous? I mean, there are things outrageous.
I think part of this,
other than the alt-right, I know about the alt-right, which I think you guys exaggerate an awful lot.
We love doing it. It's our,
we do.
We
love stirring it up.
Love exaggerating. I think the focus here, and I think the problem with the feeling that we have that you can never talk to anyone who, you know, is kind of on the other side, is we constantly emphasize the worst. I mean, you bring up Bernie Sanders. The guy's an admitted socialist. Well, you're not going to convince Bernie Sanders of anything.
Here's a good example. Penn Jillette and I.
Yeah.
Penn and I have talked about, we have so much in common and so much we don't agree on. We focus on the things we agree on. As Penn said, Glenn, by the time, if you and I ran the country, by the time we got to the place to where we had real knockdown, drag off, it's 30 years down the road. There's enough that we can come together on. For instance, why are we talking about, repeal all guns and gun control and take them all? Why are we having that conversation? That isn't even it's not based in reality in America as we know it, unless you want a revolution. What are the things that we do agree on? It may not even be arming teachers. You can't tell me that you can't have a conversation with somebody on the other side in your own life and say, wait, what are we doing? What's happening to our kids? What's happening to our kids? I'm concerned about our kids. You know, can we harden the school? What can we do? What, we can do gun control. Okay, well, okay, that let's let Washington deal with that for a minute. What are the things that we can actually do? If you can get there, then we have a chance. But I'm not even talking about policies.
Now, Pat Gray joins us. Isn't there something to say about if you're afraid to talk to someone on the other side about your values? Doesn't that mean that you don't actually have confidence in them? Like, what are you risking? Mm. Like, let's say you never, ever convince or understand anything better by talking to someone on the left. What are you risking? Right? You should. That's our job is partially, if we believe in these things, is to try to evangelize for them. We certainly believe that with faith, right? Like, if you never talk to someone who isn't a believer, what's the point?
Well, I'm not sure I'm there because Glenn just said he's tired of hating people on the other side. I'm just starting to really enjoy it.
Well, I mean hating him for no reason. Yeah. I like to get to know people and hate him for good quality reasons.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Well, I like to hate him just in general principle.
Really?
Oh, okay. I just enjoy it. Yeah, it's fun.
Yeah. It's good, isn't it?
I just feel better when I'm loaded with hate. Don't you? I'm actually, even on my show, getting people who are talking about this. How do we come together? And
it's happening. I'm telling you, it's happening.
The confusing part is, like your last caller just said, it's hard to find like-minded people on the other side. But there are some, and you found some of them, and you talk about them all the time.
Yeah, so I can't wait. I've got to have the Weinsteins on. We talked about them yesterday. The guys who are, one of them is a evolutionary biologist that taught at Evergreen University or Evergreen College in Seattle, which is as far to the left crazy, makes NYU look like, you know, you're going to class and I'm the professor.
So we would probably disagree with him on almost every particular.
Oh, he is.
Except for what makes up a man and a woman, right?
No, yeah. What his point is that we are a society that won't listen and look at facts anymore.
Yeah.
Let's just have a conversation based on facts, not feeling, not what you think, you know, but what do we know? Let's make sure we are looking for facts and having a real dialogue and not just shutting down anybody who disagrees with you. That's, to me, that's exciting, because to me, that's we're never going to agree with everybody. But we got to stop trying to find the wins or trying to find I'm going to change their mind or I'm even going to talk to them about politics. Why? When did that happen to us? Why do we only have politics? And why do we have to talk to everybody about politics? Why?
Mm-hmm.
Just find humanity again.
Yeah, there's a lot of things we agree on. If we really, you know, set aside all the politics, there's a lot of things. One of the interesting things that we agree on, and the upper echelon of the Democrat Party makes such a big deal out of, voter ID. We just voted yesterday. There's 80% support from minorities on voter ID. Why? Because they have ID and they don't want non-citizens voting any more than we do. So and it's not like they can't. I don't know how to get a driver's license. I don't know how to do that. I can't. I don't have a picture ID. What are you talking about? That is the racist viewpoint, saying that the minorities can't have access to a stinking ID. They all do.
Yeah.
I think you're getting extra calls now on this because I think people are starting to see the writing on the wall. Look what's happening in South Africa. This is terrifying.
Terrifying. Yeah, because it's already been done, right?
Look how
super successfully, by the way, caused an entire nation to starve.
Nelson Mandela is dead now, 4 years? And the new president who was arrested 4 years ago, 3 years ago for singing a song, Kill Whitey, he was arrested. He's now he's the president of South Africa, but his party that he created based on this hatred is the third largest party in the nation.
So it was essentially illegal before this.
Right. Wow. So Nelson Mandela dies within 5 years. You now have a president of South Africa says the time for reconciliation is over. And he's taking all of the land from the white people in South Africa because of this horrible, unbalance, if you will, or imbalance on ownership in South Africa. And people are, like the Black Lives Matter, if you will. I hate to even put those guys into this category, the worst of the worst of what you think Black Lives Matter might be, are going down and hunting white people down and killing them, butchering them, literally cutting them into pieces. I think the average person is starting to see, wait a minute, this hatred is going to take us to really bad places, and I don't want any part of it.
And the lyrics to Kill Whitey are unsurprisingly really terrifying, but you can dance to it. It is true. You could dance.
Yeah, South African bandstand. It was big.
It, it does have a good beat. Then
it's really catchy. Huh. Yeah. I, you know, as a white person, found myself saying, singing it all day.
Yeah.
So, it was a weird moment in the bank. So
it's kind of strange.
So Pat, we were talking earlier today, and we've given a homework assignment for the audience that tonight they all have to go to Netflix and they have to watch The Push. Did you watch that yesterday?
I did. It's so riveting.
It's incredible.
And every step of the way, you're wondering, what would I do here? Would I do that? Or would I step back and say, wait a minute. No, I'm not doing that.
I think I would have ejected.
Be careful with your details.
I think I would have ejected at the vegetarian question.
Me too. I thought so too.
Yeah, I would have been because, like, no. Yeah. That could really hurt people.
Yeah.
No.
In case you don't know, they had like little cocktail weenies, and they were supposed to have, you know, normal,
and it's one of the first things that happens, so it's not.
So it's not.
Away
I'm not giving
much.
Away a lot. They have normal and vegetarian plate. Well, the vegetarian hot dogs don't show up, so they just get this guy to say, just put the regular ones on there and put the vegetarian flag in them. And no one's gonna know.
It could really make somebody sick.
It could, but I mean, you know, most chance. I mean, you know, say this as a vegetarian, most likely the person would eat it and probably be like, wow, this is a really good vegetarian hot dog, and right. not really even realize the difference. And, you know, so it's a minor breaking.
It's a minor infraction. But it leads to, in 90 minutes, the question is, we don't want to reveal. They do this with four people, and it's stunning. Can they put these people, normal people, into a situation in 90 minutes, get a normal person to push another living human being who has done nothing to them?
Nothing wrong.
Nothing wrong. It's an innocent person. Can they convince them to push that person off the ledge and kill them? And it's an hour-long show.
And they put them through
documentary.
Hell.
It's amazing.
I felt so bad for the people involved, because he was going through hell.
How on do camera.
Did you? Yeah. Did you?
Everyone to see.
Did you notice how relieved they were when they found out? I think I would have hit the guy in the face.
I would have been pissed.
Yeah. I would have been pissed.
Yeah, you put me through all this,
and I cannot imagine the psychological impact.
That's what we talked about, my wife and I, last night. Is afterwards.
Afterwards, if you did.
Knowing that you could or you couldn't or whatever the outcome is.
Yeah.
It would affect you for life, I would think.
Big time.
The other thing I kept thinking of is, what is the liability for this show?
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, my God.
How did they get this done?
I think it would be interesting to watch these people because, you know, if anybody who decided to or didn't decide, whatever they decided to do, push or not push, I think there could be real psychological damage.
Definitely.
But it's please watch it. We're going to talk about it more tomorrow. It's called Push on Netflix.
Three quick questions for you.
Yeah.
Quick. So three things. Was it entertaining?
Yes.
Yes. Yes, right? Yeah. Was it terrifying?
Yes.
Yes. Was it morally okay for them to do it?
I don't think I can say yes to that.
I know.
Only because I know of the 1960 studies that Yale did, and I just finished reading a book called Ordinary Men that is this study. I think the times are okay to do this. Not for gratuitous entertainment, but for you better wake up. You better wake up.
Look inside yourself.
Look inside and find out who you are. I think it is.
Pat Gray Unleashed coming up on the Blaze Radio and TV networks. Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and wherever podcasts are available.
Thanks, Pat.
Glenn Beck.
Welcome to the program. There's a couple of things. I don't want you to forget that tonight at 5 o'clock, please watch the TV show. It's all about the blame game that we're playing and what the real problem is. Why is the country so screwed up? I mean, how did we get to this point? How come nothing seems to be working? There's a really simple question or a really simple answer, and it all goes to who's really to blame? Who's really to blame? We continue to blame, you know, all kinds of things, the media, the politicians, et cetera, et cetera. And we leave blame out for ourselves. However, when it counts, somebody else is blaming us. And we look at that today at 5 o'clock, and it is pretty darn eye-opening. You really want to understand what our problem is and who's blaming us, the people? Watch tonight, The Blaze TV. It's theblaze.com/TV, live at 5 and on demand at any time.
Glenn Beck. Mercury.